current state here on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. During the month of May, a different type of hunter takes to the Michigan woods. Their prey, low-lying honeycomb-shaped fungi. Those would be morel mushrooms. The woodlands mushroom is highly coveted by chefs and known for its unique taste. Phil Tedeschi is the president of the Michigan Mushroom Hunters Club, and he joins us now to talk about searching for morels. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
What's distinctive about morel mushrooms exactly? Summarize that for us.
Well, first, they have a wonderful flavor. They're out in the spring when there aren't a lot of other mushrooms in the woods. The only slightly poisonous mushrooms that grow this time of year are very easy to distinguish from the morels. So you don't need a lot of knowledge to go out and hunt morels. The summer mushrooms and the fall mushrooms are quite different. Then there are deadly poisonous mushrooms that are lookalikes to be some of the edibles, and there you need a lot of knowledge.
What do morels look like?
What do morels look like? Well, there are three kinds of morels. White or yellows, which start off with that honeycomb shape at the top. They're sometimes called sponge morels because they look like a natural sponge slightly. They go from gray to white to a yellowish color. They're fairly large. They can be 3 to 4 inches tall. Very meaty mushrooms. The black mushrooms have dark brown with pits. They're usually more slender, smaller mushrooms, but still with a very good flavor. The half-free mushrooms have a stem that, unlike the other two mushrooms, the stem attaches at the base with the other two mushrooms. With the half-free, it attaches halfway up the cap, but half of the cap hangs free of the stem.
And where are you most likely to find a morel mushroom, Phil?
Most of the morels associate with specific trees. So in this part of the state, southeast Michigan, dead and dying elms and old apple orchards are predominant habitats. We've totally lost the ash tree habitat we used to have because of the ash borer. Up north, the great ash forests are still partially alive, and that's the primary area for hunting up north. Also, the black morels can be found with poplar forests, especially young poplar forests.
I so closely associate morels with Michigan. I mean, I've spent most of my life here in Michigan. Are they common outside of Michigan?
Absolutely.
They grow
throughout the United States.
Okay. Now, why are they so coveted by chefs?
Because of the flavor.
Can you describe that flavor for us?
Taste is so subjective, but it has a slight mushroomy flavor with an overtone of nut, I think I would say. The black morels taste a little bit more woodsy than the whites.
How is this morel season comparing to others? Are we having a good morel season in 2014?
We're having a late morel season because of all the cold we had.
Oh.
Our club went up to hunt at a time when we'd usually be picking whites up north. Our annual trip up there, we found blacks over the Mother's Day weekend. Usually the blacks come out a week or two before the whites.
Do you develop an eye for finding these things? I imagine you do.
People do develop an eye. The common experience of a beginner is to walk the woods, and finally find a morel, and after that they see them.
Okay. What do you enjoy the most, the hunt, the discovery, or the meal?
Probably the hunt.
Probably the hunt. Okay. It's just a great time of year to be out there. And
actually, I prefer hunting in the other seasons. There's not as many people. It's not as crowded. It's not as competitive.
Okay. And once again, there's one mushroom that you're apt to see in the springtime that is poisonous, but you say that describe that one for us just to contrast it with the morel.
Okay. Actually, there are two. The Gyromitra esculenta, or the beefsteak morel, it's sometimes called, or just the beefsteak. is a large mushroom. It can get to a couple of pounds with a reddish brown head when it's mature, and the color is very different than any morel. It looks like a convoluted brain like cap on a stalk that has multiple chambers. All of the morels have one single hollow chamber. When you cut them in half, you could see.
Okay. Very good. Well,
the other one looks a lot like the half-free morel, and the difference is in the attachment of the stem. The other poisonous mushroom, the stem attaches all the way at the top of the cap instead of halfway up the cap.
Okay. Phil, happy hunting. We want to thank you for joining us here today. Phil Tedeschi is the president of the Michigan Mushroom Hunters Club. Thanks, Phil. So we just learned about picking morels. Now let's talk about the fun part, eating them. Ruth Johnston is the author of the book, The Art of Cooking Morels. Ruth, welcome to Current State.
Thank you so much for having me.
We just spoke with Michigan Mushroom Hunters Club president, Phil Tedeschi, about hunting morels. What do you have to do before you can cook with them?
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm particularly careful is to make sure that there are no little creatures hiding in those wonderful crevices.
Indeed.
And one of the things I use is I have a designated cosmetic brush that one would use for blush on, so all the girls will know what I'm talking about. But I use this very soft brush to brush the morels. And sometimes if they have a lot of debris on them, I'll run a little cool water over them, but I never soak them.
Okay. And generally, you try to keep water to a minimum then when it comes to preparing a morel?
You do.
Yeah.
You know, all mushrooms are so much, you know, water related, so that, you know, you don't want to add more water to them if need be. In reconstituting, that's another story. When you have a dried morel, you have to reconstitute them in something liquid. But the fresh ones, you really don't want to be soaking.
I guess it's not uncommon to run into people who have soaked morel mushrooms in salt water in order to prepare them. You're saying that can be avoided.
It can be avoided. I know that some people do it, and, you know, I always kind of laugh about it. While I don't want the little creatures in there, you know, it's always added protein. So I guess I don't worry about it quite as much. I try to make sure that the morels are clean and free of any kind of debris.
How would you describe the taste of a really good morel mushroom?
The morels are very different than any other mushrooms. There's this just enormous woodsy quality to them. There's a very intense flavor that you don't necessarily get with, a different kind of a mushroom. And because of the shape and all of the little honeycomb openings, you know, the morels are fabulous to hold any kind of a sauce. So, you know, it just grips right onto those little crevices.
Mm. Oh, I see. Now, when and where were you first introduced to morels?
Well, I was one of those funky food kinds of kids, and I grew up in a family that was not very adventuresome, but I was, and my parents were really great about affording me the opportunities to try really strange and unusual foods, and I would always gravitate on any menu. You know, if there was wild boar, that's what I was picking, or if there was morel mushrooms or something unusual. So even as a young child at an early age, I really had a lot of those opportunities. It was really in the 1990s where I became associated with Joe Bridenstine from Northern Michigan, who held these morel weekends. And there, you know, although I had tasted them and loved them previously, really, really got into it because of Joe. And I used to go up north and cook on the spot for his guests that he had for these morel weekends. And it just became, you know, just part of my yearly forage up there and forage in the woods. And so, you know, it's just been a really big part of my life since the early 90s.
It sounds like a terrific ritual, a great spring ritual, actually. Ruth Johnston is our guest here on Current State. Ruth, the author of the book, The Art of Cooking Morels. May is, of course, Morel Month here in Michigan. So if someone's preparing morels for the first time, how would you recommend they cook them? What's a good first-time recipe for somebody who's doing this for the first time?
Well, you know, if you talk to any chef or any forager, the first thing they're going to say to you is all you need to do is saute them in butter, which is true. You know, without question, they are absolutely delicious sauteed very simply in butter. You know, the key factor with morels is they have to be cooked. You can't eat them raw. They are toxic. And so just, you know, sauteing them for like 6 to 8 minutes in a frying pan, they're delicious. Now, when I did this book, a lot of my recipes are really based on very healthful kinds of preparations. And a lot of that is due in part to my husband, who's a very well-known artist and did all of the paintings in my book, which are absolutely incredible. David had a heart attack in 1987. And so subsequently, he's been very, very careful about what he eats. So in terms of my recipes, I have really tried to reduce the amount of fat, sodium, sugar, all of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But for anyone who utilizes my book, you know, they're certainly welcome to add those things back in, including cream. So,
well, let's dress it up a little bit. Beyond just sauteing a morel in butter, let's say you wanted to take it one notch a little bit more complicated. What might you suggest in terms of a recipe or a preparation?
Well, stuffing them with crab meat or shrimp or any kind of seafood is just remarkable. And, of course, batter frying them, which is not exactly the healthiest mode. A lot of the recipes that I do in the book are very ethnic-oriented with multiple kinds of ethnicities. And so, you know, I tried to pick recipes and things where the morel is really going to enhance whatever dish I'm making. So, you know, there are certainly many, many ways to prepare these.
I see there's one pudding recipe in your book. We typically think of bread pudding as a sweet dish. You offer a savory version, morel, ramp, and fiddlehead fern bread pudding. Tell us about that dish.
Well, of course, you know, I talk about the trio of the spring. And the trio to me in the spring is the morel, the ramp, and the fiddlehead fern. And I personally never put morels in anything sweet. To me, it makes absolutely no sense. And oftentimes, you know, someone will do something weird and make like an ice cream with morels or a chocolate cake. And my feeling is you're really losing it. So there are ways to do things. I also do a cheesecake, but it's savory. So this bread pudding that I've done for the book is a savory rendition utilizing the morel, the ramp, and the fiddlehead. And if you're not fortunate enough to find fiddleheads, you can always substitute asparagus. And, you know, for those of us who love bread pudding, this is a great option. It makes a great side dish or a luncheon entree. And it certainly is savory and not sweet.
I was surprised to see a recipe that involved quesadillas and morels. But indeed, you do have a recipe that involves brie quesadillas. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I told you I'm adventuresome. The quesadilla that I did in this case is a fresh fig, morel, and brie quesadilla. And, you know, certainly with quesadillas, you can fill them with anything. But this combination really came out surprisingly delicious. And it was almost like eating chutney in a cheesy tortilla. And it's very simple to make. There's not a lot of ingredients. I actually try to utilize ripe mission figs. You can certainly use dried ones and sort of boil them in some, you know, add some boiling water to reconstitute them. But very simply, you know, it's figs, it's the brie cheese, it's the morels, and it's wrapped in a quesadilla and then either, you know, pan fried or you can use a panini machine.
Morels don't always have to be the center of attention either. They're also great in side dishes. Is there one you'd recommend?
Well, you know, I love, you know, I do a potato pancake with morels. That's awesome. And, you know, you can utilize them in so many ways. It's just, you know, they're versatile. They go with so many different things. And like I said, I love, absolutely love them in the potato pancakes. I also do, you know, things that are related to rice. You know, they marry very well with rice. They're great in a risotto. I do a very interesting dish with morel scallions and hoisin pork in farro, which is an ancient grain. You know, I do all kinds of really crazy stuff, including a ricotta potato puff with morels, which is absolutely delicious.
Have you gone morel picking this season yet?
I actually did yesterday in my own woods in the area where I live, and my husband found four beautiful blondes, and I found a gray up near my mailbox. So he was home during the day because he's an artist, and so he happened to find these. And when I came home last night and was checking the mailbox, there was this big, beautiful gray morel just sitting there waiting for me. So that was kind of neat. We were up for the Morel Festival this weekend, and the picking was not wonderful. It's just a little cold even yet. So probably in the next week or two, I'm hoping I can get out and really start doing some foraging.
And your husband, I mean, this was really an interesting partnership with your husband. Tell us more about the art. He really had a chance to express himself doing the drawings.
Well, David is, you know, as I mentioned, a well-known artist. His agent is in New York. He's done everything from Steuben glass to the painting for Mount Rushmore, and has paintings in museums. And I was very fortunate that he took 2 years and did no other work but work on my book. So I'm very, very blessed to have that kind of talent in my household. And, you know, it's always a good combination, the two of us.
Do you think you'd have written the book without him? Or was that extra incentive to actually do a book about morel mushroom cooking?
Well, it was certainly incentive. You know, a lot of people said to me, are you going to do photographs? And I said, I'm really not. You know, the fact that I have David at my availability, you know, I'm so fortunate. And in truth, the book then became something even more special. You know, it wasn't just about delicious recipes. It was also a book about art, which is really how we, you know, titled it. The Art of Cooking Morels was really more about his art than it was the actual, you know, cooking process.
Well, so this was not a book that you had been thinking about for a long time, writing for a long time?
Well, we had talked about it. It was kind of interesting how it evolved. I had been the editorial director at McGraw-Hill, in charge of all the books on food and nutrition and all of the family and consumer science products. And in 2006, we were living in Illinois, and I lost my job as well as everybody else in my office and everyone else in any satellite office of McGraw-Hill. So we moved back to our home here, and instead of being really sad and upset, I thought, you know, here's a chance. You know, I'm no longer considered an intellectual property. I can now publish on my own again.
Huh.
And so it was at that time we both said this would be a great venture. And it took us 2 years, and it was perfect timing because right after I finished the book, I then started to work for Hiller's Markets. So it was a perfect segue into my new job, and it was a perfect timing to get this book developed and completed. And with the economy being so bad in Michigan, I thought if I could have it published here, that would be great. And I made a call to University of Michigan Press and asked them if they would be interested. And they said, how soon can you meet with us?
Oh, excellent.
So So it was one of those perfect situations. And then, you know, I went on to my job working for Hiller's Markets, where I'm currently the director of prepared foods for all 7 stores.
Perfect. How serendipitous.
That worked out great.
Ruth Johnston is the author of the book, The Art of Cooking Morels. This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership. Ruth Johnston, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.